and welcome to the We Are Gamers podcast. Today I'm hosted by myself, Rydent, and I'm joined by Lawrence. Unfortunately,
Hello,
we don't
everyone.
Have Michelle or Justin with us today, but we do have a very special guest with us today. He's been the narrator in the likes of Bayonetta. He's voiced the Joker in Injustice. Some of you may know him as the tyrant Dong Shuo, and my favorite, of course, Bato from Ghost in the Shell. Richard Epcar, everybody.
Hi, how are you?
I've
got to put in a little quick plug. I've done the Joker in several Batman games. Yes. And in Infinite Crisis, which is online right now, and also Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, in which I also play Raiden in that as well.
You've just kind of been put in for Mortal Kombat 10, if I recall.
Yes. I'm very, very thrilled that they had me back again to play Raiden, and I love those guys, and I was very, very pleased that they had me back, and, you know, hopefully there'll be another. I've heard rumors that there's going to be another Injustice, so I'm hoping I'll return and play the Joker in that as well, so that would be awesome.
Do you know, I have recently just finished Injustice, the story
mode.
It's taken me a little while to get into and get around to playing it. And I got to say, your Joker was very good in that. Because there was a lot of storylines for you in there, I think.
Yeah.
It was really good fun.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was, it's always tough to play an iconic character like that, especially when you're doing something that's beloved by other people for another actor doing that character. So it's always a little tough. And, you know, it's funny because I've had an interesting career where I basically have come in on several occasions, like with Kingdom Hearts, and I play Ansem in that, and I replaced Billy Zane on that. And there was some grumbling in the beginning of that one, too. I think the more I do the Joker, the more people are enjoying it and getting behind it. And listen, it's hard. I always make this comparison. I'm a huge James Bond fan, and I didn't like it when Sean Connery quit. I thought he was the best James Bond, and you have to realize that the other actors, they bring something else to it, and it's not going to be necessarily what you're used to or what your favorite thing necessarily, but. It's like everybody's Hamlet is different. And, there's a lot of these iconic characters that will go on. You know, I'm not going to be the last guy to play the Joker. And, there's going to be other actors that will play him, throughout history. And but I'm very honored and flattered to be part of that universe. And I'm also, I've done a lot of stuff with the Batman universe. I co-directed Arkham Origins and played three characters in that as well. And I'm in another group of Batman animated features that are going straight to DVD that I play a very iconic character in that. Unfortunately, I can't really talk about that yet either. But it's it's just fun to be part of that universe.
That's cool. I remember at the London Comic-Con last year, and there was that panel. There was the panel for there was yourself, and you had Roger Craig Smith, who did Batman in the Arkham Origins. You had Troy Baker, who did the Joker in Origins, and then you had yourself, Ellen, and I can't remember who else was on the panel. There was one other.
It was Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt.
Yep. And I remember you pointed out there, because people were very much someone asked a question about the Joker, and they directed it straight at Troy, didn't they? And I think you put yourself out there to put your own spin on what your opinion of that was. And I thought that was one of the things that I took away from that, and I really kind of loved what you said at that that moment.
Thank you. Well, what I said really, I'll encapsulate it for you quickly, was basically, when I was hired to do the Joker, I was hired to play the character of the Joker. And that's what I was doing. And when Troy was hired to play the Joker and Roger Craig Smith, it was a reboot of the Arkham series. So it was a prequel. So they had to basically be believably these other characters as younger men. So they had to basically grow into So Troy's character had to basically sound like he was Mark Hamill's Joker when he was younger, and Roger Craig Smith had to sound like Kevin Conroy's Batman when he was younger. And I personally was happy that I didn't have to deal with that, because I'd much rather play a character than play an actor playing a character. I just think that's kind of a ridiculous thing to do anyway. But that was my take on the whole thing. So I was very, very happy to do that. And the Joker is just such a great character, and I'm so happy to be part of that whole thing, you know.
What goes into your frame of mind for the character when you voice the Joker?
The Joker is really kind of a fun, and I've said this in the past, and people think I'm either making it up or full of crap. But the Joker, he almost has a life of his own. There's only almost like I almost kind of I know this sounds weird, but I almost kind of let him go and do what he does, and it just kind of comes out of me. I don't know where it comes from. Probably some dark corner in the back of my brain somewhere, but. He's really just it's so bizarre for me, because I've made a career of playing heroes and good guys, and I play a lot of villains too, but it just this guy is just there's no rhyme or reason to some of the things he does, so you just basically have to jump in with both feet and go for it, and that's kind of what I did, and what I do when I play him. And there's something about him. He's just so much fun. And it's kind of bizarre to me how popular he is, because he's such a despicable character, really. But it's funny to me that people just love this character so much. It's kind of weird. And I wonder if
I
that
think it's.
has anything to do with the fact that Mark wants to not do that character anymore. I don't know if it just kind of got to him over a period of time, or if it's just basically, it is kind of a rough thing on your voice and throat. So, and he's making $80 billion from Star Wars, so what the hell does he care?
Yeah.
So.
Well, he although he did have to wear a beard for the Star Wars
He had to wear a bib.
beard.
Oh, a beard.
Yeah.
That's better than a bib. I thought maybe he was drooling or something. That wouldn't be.
That could be believable, the older version of Skywalker.
Oh, that's terrible. Now, Mark's actually a very nice guy. I directed him in Shadow Chronicles, a Robotech movie.
Yeah.
And, it's funny, at the time I had no idea that I was going to ever do the Joker. So that was kind of an interesting, thing, when the way things happen in your life. But I've been very, very fortunate to work with a lot of great, great people, and either directing or working with them as actors. And I've just it's been really a fun ride, I got to say. So.
Yeah.
In speaking of working with great people, I actually have something that was sent in to me before that someone wanted to ask. The person's name is Jing Wu, and they wanted to ask if you remember dubbing a voice for a Christopher Mitchum action film, and if so, what were your thoughts on it? The name of the film was American Hunter, and it was shot in Indonesia.
Wow.
Do you remember by any chance that role?
No,
No.
no.
Okay.
But you got to, first of all, you have to remember that I've done over 400
Oh,
characters
yeah.
as just animation and anime and that sort of thing. That doesn't include all the dubbing work that I've done over the years. And yeah, I've been doing this for 30 years, so there's a lot of movies and things that I've worked on. We started out a million years ago dubbing these a lot of these chop I call them chop sake movies from Taiwan or Thailand, and they were basically the these movies where people would be dismembered in slow motion and that sort of thing. But you couldn't show a woman's breast, but you could show a man being vivisected in slow motion. So
Yeah, go
but it was
figure.
it was it was kind of interesting, and I kind of cut my teeth on all that stuff, and that's actually where I was. I'm really good at doing efforts and reactions, and it's because of the all that work I did, when I started out doing that stuff, because a lot of the actors have a really hard time with the efforts and the reactions, and and to me it just it's a piece of cake. But there was a lot of those kinds of movies that we did from all over the world, and we dubbed them into English, and I there were several of those that we did, and then there were some that they sent me that were they had they were speaking several different languages, and then I had, you know, I we have a company, my wife and I have a company called Epcar Entertainment that we do dubbing and we do voice work for games and animation and anime, and we've been doing that a long time as well. And you know, one of the jobs I got, it was something that was shot in Indonesia. And it had three different stars, and they were stars in their own countries, and they were all speaking their own languages. And I basically, there was no real plot or story or script to this thing. So basically, I had to come up with the whole story, and I had to make it fit in their mouths and make it look like they were all speaking English and tie it all together. And, you know, we've had some crazy, crazy jobs over the years, you know. One of the craziest we just did recently was Ellen, my wife, just directed Star Wars into the Navajo language. So that was a very interesting project.
Oh, wow. That sounds impressive.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound and easy either.
No, it wasn't. And I worked with the, you know, we picked two professors that were Navajo speakers that were, you know, native Navajo speakers that teach Navajo and English in the university. We got these two people together to help. I basically kind of supervised the adaptation of the script. And then Ellen literally went and stayed in New Mexico for several weeks recording this thing with novice Indian actors. And she had to basically train them and teach them in a short period of time how to do this stuff. And it came out amazing. And, you know, and the cool thing about that was, is that they had never had any major film or any TV show done in their own language. So can you imagine living in a country your whole life and everything on TV and everything in the movies is in a language that some of the people can't even understand?
And I guess it's just, you know, it's just subtitled and they've just got to live with that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and if that, I don't even know that they even have
right.
that subtitled or not. But you know, there's so many of them. We went out there for the screening, and so many of them were crying at the end and hugging us and thanking us because, you know, this it helped keep their language alive. You know, a lot of the kids or the younger people are learning English and forgetting their Navajo, and then the elders can't communicate with the younger people. And so it was kind of a cool thing. And after the movie, a lot of the younger people said, yeah, I want to learn my language now. So it was actually a very cool thing. And that was something very unique to be part of. And Ellen did a great job on it. So we were very happy with the whole thing.
So that sounds like a huge impact from just the, you know, just your time, you know, your contribution just for one small production has made like a yeah. huge impact on a lot of people.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's limited. I mean, they have I don't remember what the numbers were. I was kind of surprised they had that many people in the Navajo Nation, to be honest with you. But you know, it is a pretty big, you know, chunk of population, and you know, there was nothing like this ever before, so it was great for them. And like I say, it made a big impact on everybody, and they really enjoyed it. And it was really nice to be part of something that, you know, we do a lot of this work, and, you know, most of it's just for entertainment value, but this was something that actually, I think, helped people and people could use as a learning tool and that sort of thing. So, and they sounded great. They sounded just like the original. I don't know how she did it, but they really did. She had this guy that sounded just like Harrison Ford. He was unbelievable. Wow. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
A Harrison Ford just talking in a foreign in a completely different language.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It was interesting. It was pretty cool to see. So, and they picked the movie. They wanted it because of the you know, the force and all that stuff. That's very similar to their philosophy. So, it all kind of worked out for them. And it was a nice project.
Sounds very good.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, it sounds like it was a huge, you know, at least, you know, even for you guys, just kind of being able to do that, being a part of that was, you know, a huge thing.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I get first of all, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So, you know, to be part of that, and, you know, I've done several of the games. I've done several characters on all of the games, and to be part of anything Star Wars was just a big deal for me. So I was really thrilled to be, you know, involved with this. And you know, Lucasfilm and 20th Century Fox were very gracious in helping us with everything and allowing us to do this. And it was Deluxe Sound who did the all the recordings and everything, and it turned out great, and everyone was really, really happy with it.
It was wasn't it your was the Epcot Productions that did the voice for the thing for the Ghost in the Shell Innocence?
Yes, yeah, that's kind of a funny story because as you know, I played Bateau for a long time, and I think I was grousing to you earlier before we started recording that I had to audition for this part that I've done. I've done two series and three movies and or five movies and three games I've voiced this character on, and they want me to audition for this character. And that's kind of what happened with me in Ghost in the Shell. I did the movie Ghost in the Shell, the first one.
Yeah.
And then they got about a year later, they got this series, Gits. And they called me up to tell me about it. And I said, oh, that's great. And then after they told me about it, they said, we'd like you to come in and audition for it. And I'm thinking in my head, what you what? And they said, yeah, we'd like you to audition. And I'm thinking, you sons of bitches, Reverend. And I said, okay, I'll go in there. And there was about 200 guys in there auditioning for Bateau. And I'm going, wow. Oh, my God, this sucks. So anyway, I got the part, thank God. But, and I was thinking maybe because they thought I sounded like that guy in the movie. But anyway.
Something about this guy.
Yeah. But, it was only two of us that made the cut from the film to the series. It was me and William Knight, who plays Aramaki. They replaced everybody else. So I was very, very fortunate in that. Now, getting back to Innocence, when I was in Boston, actually visiting my son. He was attending Berklee College of Music at the time. And there was this big poster for Innocence. And I saw that and I said, oh, my God, there's another Ghost in the Shell thing. And I got excited and I called up the company that did the dub for Gits, and I said, what's going on with this? This is because I heard it was also Bateau's story, pretty much.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, so I was excited about that. And they said, well, we had bid on it, but they're not going to do it, and it's owned by DreamWorks now for North American territory, and we're not sure if they're going to dub it or if they're going to just release it with subtitles. Now, I was kind of worried because in the past, when the big studios get a hold of these things, they generally cock them all up because they're not used to doing dubs. They're it's a whole different thing, and it's not their forte at all. So I have, since I was also a supervisor for DreamWorks and Universal Pictures and all that, so I thought I'd give them a call and talk to somebody, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody, and so I kind of gave up. And I went to a convention. I went to Otakon in Baltimore, and I was going out to dinner one night, and I was trying to find the people from DreamWorks, and I guess they had left. And I'm going to dinner in a van, and I'm sitting next to this very attractive Asian lady, and I start talking to her, and it turns out she's one of the producers of Ghost in the Shell. And so I told her who I was and what I did, and I said, and I'm interested in doing an English dub of it, Who should I talk to? So she told me who to talk to at DreamWorks, and I called this person up, and she never got back to me or returned my call. So I kind of gave up again. And then I was called into a convention in London, not this one that you were at, but of course it was a while ago.
Yeah,
London.
Yeah.
And I get approached by Manga UK, and they said, because at this time, by this time, I thought they're either going to, they'll screw it all up, or they'll cast Johnny Depp as Bateau, or, the whole thing would go to hell. And, it just would be terrible. And the sync would be terrible. And I just, I wanted to, if they weren't going to cast me as Bateau and they wanted a movie star to play the part, I thought, well, at least let me direct and write it so I can make sure that it comes out well,
Because I'm sure you know what it's like when with fans. If it sounds completely different, how they end up reacting.
Well, yeah, that's good. Things. I mean, for us, it's good because, hopefully they wouldn't like that. But anyway, I bumped into the Manga UK guys, and they said they're very unhappy with the release version with the subtitles, and they want to have an English version. And would, they understand I have a company, and would I be interested in bidding on it? I said, sure. So I bid on it, and the next day they said, we'd like you to do it. And it just, it's like one of those things, be careful what you wish for, because, I wanted to write and direct it and do Bateau in it, and I got to do all three. So it turned out great, and you know, not that there was anything wrong with the director who directed Gets. He did a great job. And actually, Kevin Seymour, I'll give him a plug. He recently just passed away, and he was a great guy. And he's responsible for bringing a lot of the anime to the States, and he's responsible for bringing Ghost in the Shell to the States. So we have to thank him for that. But there were times that I didn't really agree with him as a director, and that's hard when you're an actor in the booth. You basically have to defer to the director and do what they want you to do. So for me to finally get the opportunity to direct myself and play Bateau the way I wanted to play him, it was a great thrill for me, and I was tickled to do it. So that turned out to be a really cool project, and I was really, really happy. And then, of course, several years later, they decided to do it, redo it in America with Bondi, and they got the old, Gets cast together again, and we redid it with a different script, and it was the same movie, and it was really kind of bizarre, to tell you the truth. But I'm going, well, I'm playing Bateau, and they're paying me again, so what the hell?
Cool.
Right.
Because they also did, the standalone Complex movie, the third movie, wasn't there? I believe you did Bateau in that one as well, but I don't think you did the voice direction, if I recall.
The only one that I directed was The Innocents,
which is my favorite of the movies, to be honest with you.
Cool. Well, it's a gorgeous movie. It's absolutely gorgeous. But yeah, the other ones, there was another one. I'm forgetting the name of it. It was a very cool one that Solid State Society.
That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. Solid State Society. That was kind of a cool one too. And that came out, it was the same group that did Gets that did that one.
Yeah.
And we did, we did some of the games and all that stuff. And listen, I always kind of felt uncomfortable. I certainly wasn't trying to, get the job away from them or anything like that. But I guess they had bid on it, and the Manga UK guys thought it was too much. They didn't want to pay that. And, that's why they approached me to do it. So I did it, and... it all worked out. It was fine, And like I say, I finally got to do one version where I got to play Bateau the way I wanted to play him. And I really like doing it. There's a couple of things, like technical things. For example, when I do it for those guys, they compress my voice, which means they pull the bass out. They pull out the highs and the lows, and they compress it so that it supposedly sounds better on a television set. But I never liked it because they pull all the bass out of my voice, and Bateau's this big, guy. Yeah. And I always wanted him to sound big and intimidating. And so when we did our version, I said, I don't want you to compress my voice at all. I want it to be full and sound, rich. And so they did. And I thought the way it sounded in that movie sounded awesome. So, that was one thing. And there was a few things with the script, and the script was so dry, and it was so weird because it's all platitudes and sayings and that sort of thing. And to try to make that sound like natural conversation was really a challenge. So we did that, and then I tried to put a little humor in here and there, very little, but and some of the purists were not happy that I did that. But I tried to make it a little more enjoyable as a feature,
Yeah, I guess if you stuck to the dry script, it just wouldn't quite have the same appeal, especially to me, as it does now, because with a little bit of humor, with the an understandable script, although the general plot isn't completely understandable, because it's it does go all over the place, especially when they go in and they keep repeating the same place, don't they?
Yeah. Well, when I was first writing it, I'm going, is this a glitch in the movie? What the hell is?
The first time I watched that, I thought, oh, is my DVD player broken?
Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's I don't think anyone's ever done anything like that before. And it was, it's one of those movies. It really is an incredible film because even to this day when I watch it, I see things in it that I didn't see before. And it was really, really fun to work on that. And like I say, I really tried to make him my own. And obviously you don't want to change it too much because it's not my film. It's it's someone else's film, and you have to honor what they created. So, and I had a long chats with Crispin Freeman about it. He plays Togusa in it.
Yep.
And we were saying that, you know, I said, God, you know, there's so much of this stuff. It doesn't sound like natural dialogue. Who talks like this? You know, and I had to make it so that it sounded like they were having a conversation, but they were injecting all of these weird sayings into the thing. And it was just, it was really tricky. It was one of the toughest scripts I've ever written in my career, I think.
Still,
to make sure it all connected, right? To make sure that it still had that natural, like, I can't say natural appeal, but that it sounded like an actual conversation between two people rather than just, you know, this line, then this line, then this line, making sure it all linked together.
Yeah, and I think that the original kind of did sound like this line, then this line, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure in his head he kind of knew what he was doing, but it was almost so obtuse at times. You're going, what? It's almost like he had to drop acid to watch this thing because it was like so like, bizarre and convoluted, you know.
But, like, who talks like this?
Yeah, I tried to make it sound like they were having natural conversations and that they were slipping these things in as part of their conversation. And then of course you have to make it fit the flaps on top of everything else too. So there were times where there were actual quotes from the Bible or certain places that did not fit the mouth flaps. And it's like, wow, how do I edit that so that it fits, but he's saying the same thing. So it was very tricky. I got to tell you, the whole thing was very tricky to do.
So what's your, to you, what's Bato? His character, what kind of makes him?
He, what I love about Bato is he's very, you know, in many ways he's very similar to me. I have to say that. I mean, I'm not going to go, you know, around beating up criminals and that sort of thing. But, I mean, he's tough on the outside, but inside he's really kind of mush potatoes. You know, he's really got a heart of gold. He's a very, very fair-minded person. He has a dry sense of humor, and I just think he doesn't take any shit from anybody, and I really like that about him, that he just, you know, he just calls it as he sees it, and he's just a really good guy. There was one episode called Jungle Cruise. I don't know if you guys remember that show or not, but that was the one where the guy was skinning the women alive and gets and yep. And that one, actually, that won an award. I won an award for that particular episode. But the thing that I loved about that was, you know, the whole time I'm doing it and watching this, I'm going, God, I would shoot this guy. I would kill him. That was my whole instinct. I wanted to kill this guy who was doing this to the women. And Bato didn't do that. He arrested him, and everyone was surprised. And he said, you know, why are you surprised? I'm a cop, and he's a good cop, and he did his job. He arrested the guy, and that's what they're supposed to do. And, you know, so that was a really emotionally charged episode because of all the stuff that was going on in that. And, he's just, like I say, he is cybernetic and he has all this stuff going on, but he's in love with the Major and he wants to protect her, and it's an unrequited love, which is kind of sad, but you know, she cares for him and she thinks highly of him, but not in the way he'd like her to think about him. And,
which is kind of what you see at the end of that film. You kind of get the, that little connection between them when she goes into the body of the doll. And
yeah, the gynoid. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he puts, I almost want to cry every time I see that, when he takes off his coat and puts it on her, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's just so touching, you know. He's just so protective of her, and you know, it's that unrequited love thing that and I knew from the first movie when we did that he had fallen in love with her. And then it was kind of weird that she comes back in the first movie, she comes back as a little girl, and I'm going, well, that's really uncomfortable. He falls in love with her and she shows up as this little girl. That was kind of weird. But it's great. And the thing that I really love in general about the show, you know, it's not just a cop shoot 'em up show. It's got all of these layers, these psychological layers to it. And they ask a lot of questions about, you know, the morality of technology And you know, I think these are, you know, the technology in our world is growing exponentially.
Yep.
And you know, but we're still, you know, plodding along as a species. So it's kind of interesting to think about this stuff and to hope that we can control some of this stuff and use it for good and not use it for evil. I mean, the technology in itself isn't inherently good or evil, but it's the way people use it, you know, like this, you know, this hacking of Sony recently just happened. Mm. You know, and it's all this shit is coming true much too quickly, you know, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So it's a little frightening.
The more we kind of tend to rely on it, the scarier it becomes.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the more it can be exploited as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the sad part, you know. You just have people that are just horrible people and amoral, and you know, don't care, and they'll subvert it for their own uses, and it's a little frightening, you know.
Did you check out? I know you didn't voice in that the recent Arise Ghost in the Shell, where it kind of does the early plot.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been part of that, and but they, you know, there was a couple of things with that. One was when they did the original in Japan, they replaced the actors with new actors because they did the same thing we did in Arkham. They rebooted the story.
Younger.
Prequel.
Yeah. So they wanted younger actors. And the other thing was they were recording it in Texas. Funimation was recording it. And we're in Los Angeles. So I don't think it would work out too well. Although they did have Mary in there.
Yeah, she voiced a new character that was introduced in Arise.
Yeah. I'm going, okay, you have Mary in there. What about me? Hello?
because I quite liked that the story in that. And I thought, you know, because there isn't that connection between the connection starts to build between the Major and Bato. But it's very light, you know, it's not like in the later films because it's a prequel, and it's quite nice seeing that relationship kind of build and seeing the Major in a kind of different light because she's not in her current, you know, in her role that you see her in the later in the films.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. I. You know. Honestly, I haven't seen it yet just because it hurts a little bit to think about.
Right. It's a sore spot.
It is a little bit, but you know. Chris Sabat did Bato in Texas.
He did a good job.
I'm sure he did. He's a very talented guy. He's a great guy, and I've actually worked with him. He brought me in to do, you know, they do Lupin the Third there, and we do Lupin the Third here. I was Jigen in Lupin the Third and directed all the shows and movies and stuff, and here in L.A., and they did their, we did the red coat version. They did the green coat version. So when they got this this new series called a woman called Fujiko Mine. He called me up and he said, you know, you're in everything Lupin. He said, and I feel like I need to have you in this. Would you consider playing Inspector Zenigata? And I said, yeah, I would. I said, is it the same? Because in our version, Zenigata is like this bumbling buffoon. And he's just like this crazy, you know, almost like a Martin Short character or something. He's just like a really crazy character. And I said, is that the, he said, no, in this one, it's very dark. And he said, and Zenigata is very tough. In fact, he actually forces himself on Fujiko, which I thought was kind of nice. I finally get to have sex with Fujiko. You know, she's kind of hot for her too. So I said, okay, you know, and I flew into Texas and we did it. And I had a great time working with him, and he took very good care of me, and we, while I was there, I worked on a few other projects, and it was really kind of fun. I mean, you know, I see some of these guys at conventions, you know, because our paths cross at conventions from time to time, but it was really kind of nice, and it was funny. I got to go back to an earlier Otakon when we had this long panel of all of the voice actors, and I'm telling the audience, you know, the different things that I'm part of, and then the guy sitting next to me was Chris Sabat, and he says, yeah, and I played Jigen also, and I'm going, because I up to that point I didn't realize there was somebody else on the planet in doing Jigen in English, you know, so that was kind of a shock to me, and I learned later that that the Japanese do business very differently than we do in America. And they, you know, for example, if you're doing a Batman story, for example, Warner Brothers owns everything, lock, stock, and barrel. If you're doing it on TV, if you're doing a film, you're doing a game, whatever it is, Warner Brothers owns that character, period. In Japan, let's say you're doing whatever character you're doing, you could have one company own that character for a game. You could have another company own that character for a series. You could have another company own that character for a movie. And so you've got all these, you know, different companies doing these different versions of the same thing. And to me, it's kind of weird because there's no continuity whatsoever. You know, you'll get series of these shows with the same characters, and then you'll get games that come out about the same time, and sometimes they even rename the characters, different characters, and they have different voices, and I just think it's kind of a weird way to do it, but that's the way they've been doing it, and it seems to work for them, I guess.
Would confuse me. Would confuse me so much.
Obviously, our way is better.
at least it's straight up. You know what you got, you know.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, whatever. Whatever works, you know, who cares? But that was kind of a shock because, honestly, I'd never heard that before. So, you know, and that's the thing, you know, we get so attached to these characters. It's like, you know, I am a little proprietary about Bato, and I am a little attached to him and doing him. And the fact that somebody else is doing him now, it is kind of sad for me. And, you know, listen, it's... you know, it's the same. I've taken over a lot of characters for other people, and that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you know, I'm in Kingdom Hearts. I play Ansem and Terranort in that, and Xehanort, and the way I got that part was that Billy Zane did the first game, and then he, for whatever reason, they didn't like him, or he wanted too much money, or wasn't available, or he pooped in their salad. I'm not really sure what happened. But they asked the Japanese producers of that game, basically ask who plays Bato in America, because the guy who does the voice of Ansem in Japan is the voice of Bato in Ghost in the Shell. So they said, who does the voice of Bato in America? And that was one of the few times they actually called me up and said, we'd like you to do the part. And they didn't have me audition or anything. It was fantastic.
Wow.
Oh, wow. You got time for a quick little story?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, when I first went in to do this, I knew nothing about Kingdom Hearts, because I didn't play the game and I didn't know anything about it, and so I go in there, and there's six Japanese producers in the booth, and there's six people from Disney in the booth, and I would do a line of dialogue, and the engineer would come on the talkback, and he'd go, just a minute. And they would talk amongst themselves for 5 minutes, and the guy would come back on the talk back and say, can you do that line a little slower? So I do the line a little slower, and they go, just a minute. And they would talk amongst themselves for, you know, 5 minutes. And then they'd come back on the talk back and say, can you do that line a little faster? And this like went on all day until I felt like I was going to jump off a cliff. And then finally we took a little break, and I pulled the engineer aside. I said, how did Christopher Lee put up with this? He said, oh, they did that to him once. And he said, all right, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to read this script from the top to the bottom, and then I'm going home. And I thought, how cool is that?
I'm picturing him just standing there, just glaring at them while he's reading the lines now, too.
Oh, yeah. He was just, you know, I just thought, oh, my God, I wish I could do that. Of course, it was my first time. Now I've done six of them. Maybe I can do that now. But they don't bother me after the first one. They don't bother me anymore. But it was kind of funny. You know, I guess they wanted to get it right the way they wanted it. But that's a funny story. And then I was watching an interview with, I think it was Lucas and Spielberg, and they were talking about Christopher Lee on TV. And they were saying, oh, we love him, but he'll only do one or two takes and then he'll walk off the set. And I had to crack up, you know. Oh, my God, that's so funny, you know.
I bet
but
Jackson
he's in his 80s, you know. He's in his 80s. He doesn't want to waste time.
Yeah. I bet Jackson had Peter Jackson had the same issue when he was doing Saruman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, he just said, we got it. That's it. And he walks off, and, you know.
But I absolutely love Christopher Lee. I think he's amazing.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
And he will always be the Dracula to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was a big, you know, I played Dracula on stage many
times. I did see.
And he was, you know, I loved his Dracula. And I always, you know, I always feel fondly or think fondly of him. And I'm so glad, because a lot of those guys that came from these Hammer films, you know, they never were able to make the jump, you know, to the A pictures, you know, and he really did. And I was really happy for him. And Peter Cushing was in Star Wars. So they, you know, yeah. they got to do some cool stuff too.
Yeah. I can't remember who did he used to do a lot of stuff. Because Vincent Price used to do bits as well.
Yeah.
I know he's done a few films, but they weren't quite in the, you know, the same kind of production side as what you get nowadays.
Yeah. Vincent Price is another one who was, you know, a very serious actor, and he kind of got typecast in these horror movies, and, you know, and he made the best of it, and he had fun, you know. And listen, you know, we're not always, you know, responsible for the way people see us or perceive us. And, you know, it's like I've had situations like that in my career where they, you know, say, oh, you know, he does this kind of character, or that, you know, it's like, you know, with the Joker, for example, people were shocked when they first announced that I was doing the Joker. No one could imagine it because they were so used to hearing me do Bateau. They couldn't imagine that voice being the Joker, but that's not the voice that I use at all.
What, you got this guy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was interesting. And now they're coming around, that finally, these guys. So it's good.
Yeah.
It's kind of what Troy Baker had to go through, because Troy Baker's voice, aside from like when he voiced Pain in Naruto, which as far as I'm aware, you voice Hanzo in Naruto.
Yeah, that's right. And Manda, the snake.
Right. But for Troy Baker, aside from when he voices Pain, Troy Baker's voice is very recognizable. So when people were like, Troy Baker's voice in the Joker, how's that going to work?
Yeah.
And, you know, come Comic-Con, he does his read-off for the Joker as a little preview. And then everyone's just sitting there like, he sounds like Mark Hamill.
Well, that's what they wanted, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now everyone's coming around to, okay, Troy Baker is a great Joker. Like, yeah. But at first, everyone was like, you got him?
See, another Joker I liked was John DiMaggio.
Yeah.
He did it for Under the Red Hood, and I thought that was a brilliant take. Because, again, he doesn't do a Mark Hamill. He does his own thing. And
yeah. It's funny, I'm doing a convention with John in January at SAC Anime. And I'm looking forward to meeting him, because we have actually never met face to face.
Oh, really? That'll be
fun. Yeah. You know, it's funny, because when I started doing it, people accused me of trying to sound like Mark. And I, to this day, and this is the truth, I have never heard Mark Hamill's Joker.
That's exactly what you said at the convention as well.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that impressed me.
It's still true. And I go out of my way not to hear it, especially now, because I just don't want people to think that I'm trying to, because I'm not. And I wouldn't do that anyway, because as I said before, I don't ever want to play an actor playing a character. I want to play the character. And I don't, you know, everybody's going to bring something different to it. And, I know people love Mark's version of it, and they think very highly of it, and that's wonderful. And
I think what come with Mark's version was the fact that, because it spanned over so many animated series plus the the movies that come in along with it, and people got so used to that, you know, that voice. Because even, you know, before that you had whoever else doing the old animated series and stuff. So
the old time ones were just, I shouldn't say that, but oh my god, some of the Jokers, the original guys that did them were just. I don't think they were the right
character.
Yeah, I don't think they were right for it. But you know, it was a lot more cartoony back then, and they wanted to be a little silly. So
do you think the whole thing, you know, the whole industry's like really changed in that respect over the years?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, look at the Batman TV series and look at the Christian Bale Batman movies. I mean, they're just, it's a completely different thing, and everything's gotten darker and, you know, and more. Which I like, actually. I think it's kind of cool to do that, to make it, you know, in the whole thing about Batman, really, and the thing that I think they never ever got right until these Christopher Nolan movies was that Batman's supposed to scare the crap out of the bad guys. That's his whole thing.
Fear was his thing, yeah.
Yeah, he's supposed to scare them. And when they finally did that, I go, yeah, they finally got it right. That's, you know, I mean... You know, look at George Clooney's Batman. He couldn't scare anybody.
He could scare him with his nipple suit.
Yeah, that was
Oh,
pretty scary.
God.
You could hang a coat on that though.
Oh,
See,
man.
I quite I did quite like not Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer did the other one. Michael
Yeah.
Keaton. I quite liked his, you know, his ones. I thought they were pretty cool, especially
Yeah.
Batman Returns.
Yeah.
And I
Yeah.
did love Nicholson, his take on the
I
Joker
thought
at
he
the
was
time.
great. He did a great job. He absolutely did. You know, he was really kind of like, but you know, he once again he made it his own. He really
Yes.
was. You know, and he did a great job. It was a great idea to cast him, I think. You know, he was bigger than life, and he was perfect for that character, I think. But yeah, you know, like I say, you know, it's gonna change with time, and it's gonna go, you know, different places, and you know, there'll be other actors that'll bring their spin to it, and you know, and that's what happens.
So you've done I mean, you know your credits extend God knows how long. Do you kind of have any preferred roles or types of characters that you like to do, or just whatever comes your way?
Yeah, you know, I've been really, really blessed and fortunate in many ways that a lot of great, I've had the opportunity to play a lot of really wonderful characters, and I'm really thankful for that. And you know, it's nice that people think of me for these wonderful projects. And you know, there's been a lot of dogs in there too, believe me. But you know, it's just nice to do something of quality. And you know, it all begins with the writing. If there's good writing involved, then it makes a huge difference. You know, but if there's bad writing, then you have to work like crazy to try to, you know, make it you know, palatable. You know what I mean? So you know, you have all those things. But yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. There's a lot of I've you know, Bateau and Jigen, and there's a character I play in Xenosaga, Ziggy. I don't know if you
Yes.
Ziggurat 8, and he's kind of like a RoboCop character. But there's a lot of sadness and pathos to his character. So he was a lot of fun for me to play as an actor because, you know, anytime you can just kind of sink your teeth into something and really, you know, really do it and get emotionally, you know, involved, it's nice as an actor. It's rewarding. You know, a lot of times we go in there, we'll do, you know, I've done a lot of Call of Duties and Spec Ops, and you're just basically in there screaming your ass off for hours, you know, over the artillery fire and the tanks and everything. And, you know,
That brings to mind Tara and Yuri's film Con Artist, which I know you featured in a cheeky little section.
everybody said, you know, I've yet to see it. Is it funny?
Yes, it is. It's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. I the MCM, the London Expo that you were at, actually was the first showing of that,
Oh.
and they showed it on the Friday, and I watched it then, and they recently actually released it. I think it was about 3 weeks ago or so, or the beginning of December at least.
Okay.
They re
And
they released
I'm
it.
in this thing, right?
Yes, you're in there. You make a cheeky sign.
I do.
Yes. Yeah,
Oh.
you had the flip sign, which you write something on
I
That's funny.
have no idea. I'll have to see it.
You have to see it.
I don't even remember doing it, to tell you the truth.
It's a really good film. I guess you, if you watch it, you could probably relate to a lot more than what myself as a con goer would do, because it kind of takes it from from your perspective, but as a mock thing.
Ah.
But I
Well,
thought what they did was brilliant.
I'll have to check it out. I'll have to look at it. You know, I give those guys a lot of credit. They're always throwing up new stuff and trying new stuff. And actually, you know, Yuri and I we worked on Warehouse 13 together. I played Edison, and he played, I'm trying to remember who he played. We had Edison and two other creators. I can't remember their names right now, but we were supposedly the guys that created Warehouse 13 in the beginning. And so it was like a flashback episode, and it was kind of fun. It was fun. I worked with him, and Todd Haberkorn was the other guy that was in the thing. So it was kind of a funny thing to do, and we had a great time doing that.
With
I was actually I'm responsible for getting Yuri into Robotech because
Oh, really?
we had an actor who did Shadow Chronicles, and before I came on board, because they had another director there and they weren't happy with the way it turned out, so they brought me in to fix it. but anyway, the guy they had playing this character was just dreadful. And he was, you know, he was a TV actor and he worked a lot as a TV actor, but he just was a terrible voice actor. And I told them, I said, listen, I've got the perfect guy for this part. You know, he would be just perfect. And so I kind of talked him into it. And then Yuri came in and knocked it out of the park and everyone was really, really happy about it. And it just really elevated the whole thing. Cause if they had left that other guy in there, it would have been terrible. But anyway, it all worked out. And so, he was really excited about that because, you know, he was, as a kid growing up, he would love to watch Robotech. So he was really happy to be part of that. So I think I have a place in his heart for that, for doing that for him.
You've done, I understand you've done a few charity things as well over the recent mm-hmm. years and stuff. You've done radio shows and things. I think you did some with Aaron Fitzgerald and stuff.
Yeah.
So what kind of things did you do there and who did you do it for?
Well, we did. I couldn't do it this year, but last year I was a host of this. It was a Santa breakfast, basically, in L.A. here. And what they did was they brought in busloads of homeless kids. And they also brought in a bunch of battered women. And they gave them a nice breakfast at this lovely restaurant, and they all got gifts, and there was Santa there for the kids, and there was a bunch of cosplayers playing, you know, Spider-Man and Batman and all the different characters, and we had a great time with it. It was really wonderful to do that, and anytime I can be part of anything that can, you know, help anybody like that, I'm more than happy to do it. I was, you know, we had Steve Bloom was there and Ellen Stern was there, my wife, and who else did we have? We had Mark Ryan, who's in Black Sails, he was there. And we had a couple of course Aaron was there. We had a couple of other people. I'm trying to remember who was there. Sally Adi, I think. I'm probably mispronouncing her last name, but another voice actress, very lovely person. But we had a lot of nice people there. They were basically just pitching in and helping out, and so we did that. And it was put together by a guy named Ethan Dentenmeyer, who does all those, and he does a lot of. Work like that for kids and stuff, and I think it's really nice because it's a tough time of year for those guys, you know. So anyway, that we do that, and you know, I've through the years I've done stuff, and Ellen and I have gone and appeared at different places, and like I say, anytime we can, we donate a lot of stuff. We sign a lot of our merchandise and stuff and give it to auctions and charities for that go to good causes and that sort of thing. So anytime we can do that. Most of the conventions we go to, they have some sort of charity that they're affiliated with, and so we sign a lot of stuff for them, or we bring extra merchandise to give them, and you know, anything we can do to help, we're happy to do that. So you know,
that's really nice.
Yeah, it's fun, and listen, it makes us feel good too. You know, yeah. Feel like. There's something we can do to help, you know, somehow, you know, try to use this whatever it is for
it's,
some good.
It's strange because, I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, I wouldn't know the voice actors from any of the things that I was doing. But now, like, everyone seems to know, like, voice actors and things from their shows and from their games, like, they're, you know, like they would their celebrities. And it's quite strange.
It's bizarre, but I have to say, in Japan, it's kind of the norm. I mean, in Japan, they're treated like huge stars. It's incredible. They really, really take care of these guys. And I'm thinking about moving to Japan because
you want that kind of treatment.
They really roll out the red carpet for these guys, whereas over here, it's like, you know, you could be recording in some warehouse under the dock somewhere.
Yeah. I think we were just trying to think. I think it was Carl Hebert. We were talking to him, and he was just coming from doing Ryu in Wreck-It Ralph or for a Wreck-It Ralph thing, and
right.
and he was saying there about he wishes that there were so many more of, like, voice actors that got to do some of the, you know, the big productions like the Disney stuff, because a lot, he said it, he has to then direct a lot of these people, these big name actors, because they don't do voice, they're not good at doing voice. They can do acting on behind a camera, but they don't do voice. And he said it, if he has to be there directing, he wished that, you know, he could be there doing the voices and probably taking a making the production a lot cheaper than what it is to hire the likes of whoever.
Hang on 1 sec.
That's cool.
Not a problem.
No, go ahead, guys. We're almost done here. I'm just my wife just. I'm doing an interview.
Oh, okay.
My wife Elvis Stern just popped in. So anyway, go ahead. What were you guys saying?
Yeah, I was just saying. Is that something which you would consider would be a better move if some of these big productions had maybe used more voice actors, people that are actually trained in voice acting then.
Oh God, yes. I mean, I've directed a lot. Recently, I directed a bunch of original animated features, and they all wanted names. I put that in quotes, but and some of the people I've directed, and some of them are wonderful actors. I mean, they're wonderful film actors, but the thing that the producers don't realize is that it's a different style of acting. It's a different technique, and it's like saying somebody's a great kabuki dancer doesn't mean they can do ballet, just because they're a dancer. You know what I mean? And people seem to think that if somebody's an actor, they can voice act. Well, it's a whole different style of acting. And there's so many of the actors, the film actors particularly, that come in and they think they're going to sell it with their eyes. Well, the mic doesn't hear your eyes. The mic doesn't see you move, and you need to create the character with your voice. So it's a very different style of acting. And sometimes it's really like pulling teeth with these guys. And I would much rather have seasoned voice actors in there because they're so good, and it makes my life so much easier than these celebrities that it's like pulling teeth. And, not to say that they're all like that, but there are a lot of them that are, it's just a whole different, thing for them. And they freak out a little bit, to tell you the truth. It's kind of funny. They go in there and they really, I don't know if they just feel naked, because they don't have their body or their eyes.
Yeah, probably find it hard to get into character without being able to physically get into character, getting into character, which I guess you guys, in a way, you guys. So I've seen some of, some studio things where some people do get into character physically while they're shouting into it, screaming or talking into a mic. And
yeah, it's a very different style of performing, and like I say, not everybody is comfortable doing it, and unfortunately, on many occasions, I've had to direct these guys, and it really is like pulling teeth sometimes. So, it would be really nice if they would let me just cast this stuff sometimes. Now, in the games, on the other hand, in the games, for the most part, they're all really good voice actors because that's who they use. Occasionally, they'll get somebody like Kevin Spacey to come in and do, Advanced Warfare, which I'm also in. I'm also in that game, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Did you actually get to do anything with Kevin Spacey, or was your recording completely separate?
Yeah, he recorded all his stuff. He mo-capped his part, and they basically animated all of his stuff, and he recorded his stuff when he did it. So he was basically just doing a movie role, and they animated to it, But, somebody like Kevin Spacey, I'm sure, would be good anyway, because he's a very good, versatile actor. But, just like I say, some people are just really good at it, and some people are just not good at it. And it's just very tough when we have to work with people that just don't know what the hell they're doing. And, it makes it uncomfortable for everybody, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of close out with, we're talking about cons. I mean, what cons have you gone to this year, and what have you got kind of planned for the next year or whatever?
Let me pull this up. I mentioned SAC Anime. Ellen and I are going to be there January 2nd through the 4th of this coming new year. So it's starting off the new year right at the top. And then in January also, January 24th, 25th, we're going to be at Setsu Con in Pennsylvania. at State College, Pennsylvania. We tried to go last year, actually, and we got snowed out. We went to the airport four times, and they canceled our flights four times.
I think I saw you tweeting about that.
Yeah, it was horrible. We wound up doing some Skype panels for them, but yeah, and they're going to bring us in hopefully, and it'll all work well. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. As you know, I hate traveling back east during the winter. You know, so I'm a little nervous about it. But and then in February we have a con called the Shock Pop Comic Con in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and that's going to be February 13th through the 15th. And all of those conventions, I'm going with Ellen, so you can meet us both at these conventions, and we're going to have a lot of fun, and we'd love to see everybody. So if you're in Sacramento or Pennsylvania or Florida, please come by and say hi to us.
And I would definitely recommend that. These guys are awesome to talk to.
Thank you.
I had a good time talking, chatting with you. I mean, tonight chatting with you, and also when I did meet you at the con, both experiences have been absolutely awesome. So,
well, good. I appreciate that. I appreciate my fans. I really do. I'm not, you know, some people are, I don't know, they're put off or they I don't know. I don't get the whole attitude thing, but I really appreciate my fans, and oftentimes they know more about this stuff I'm working on than I do. So, you know, I love talking to them. I love hearing their take on certain things, and you know, they really appreciate what it is we do. And you know, we're in these dark booths for hours at a time, and you know, we don't know if people like what we're doing or what we're not doing. You know, so when I go to these conventions and I meet people that are really excited about the work and really happy about what you've done, it makes us feel good too, and we really enjoy it. So we do appreciate it.
I don't know if you remember someone giving you a tiny little Dong Shua figure.
Yes, I do. Was that you?
That was me.
Oh, nice. I love him. He's one of my favorite characters. You know, he loves women, drink, and money and power. I mean, yep. How could you not love the guy?
we're big Dynasty Warriors fans here, so you know, we absolutely love these plots and characters.
I gave you a little Dong Zhou laugh there, Paul.
Yes,
I do love. I love his laugh, and I love Sima Yi's.
Yeah.
I guess we'll close out for tonight. Thank you a lot, Richard, for
my pleasure
joining us. You know, it's been awesome.
And after the new year, let's do this again. You can have your whole crew there.
Yeah, yeah. We're always more than welcome to, you know, to do little interviews and you know, where it's another long session like this, so we can do shorter ones and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, it's been
all brilliant. Right, you guys. Well, have a wonderful Christmas and happy New Year to you both.
And you. And,
thank you. And you and your family as well.
Thank you. And stay warm in New York, because I know it gets cold there. And
oh, yeah.
It doesn't get as bad in where you're at, right?
It depends. I mean, some years it's terrible. Because we're at that tiny little island, sometimes we get a lot of the stuff come over from the Atlantic. So one year it's terrible, and another year it's, you know, it's all right. Like now it's all right, but...
Right. All right. Well, listen, you guys have a happy holidays and all the best, and we'll talk after the new year.
And you, thank you.
All right, you guys. All the best.
Bye-bye. You as well.